Okay, so we are holding on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. So we're holding on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph by the two dots, the ninth. Okay, so we're holding on Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, the ninth line by the two dots. We learned yesterday about a Machlokes Abaye and Rava about the definition of Mis'asik. We said that there's a concept in halacha called mis'asik, where if a person accidentally did a malacha or an isur or whatever, then he's not chayiv chatos for it. We said he is chayiv chatos if it was something involving chaylev or arayis, because after all he had hana, even if he was mis'asik. But otherwise, when it comes to Shabbos, when it comes to other kinds of things that he's chayiv chatos, then he's potter on mis'asik. And we were discussing what exactly is the definition of mis'asik according to Abaye or according to Rava. We said that suppose you had a person, so if a person intended to do one action and instead did a different action, which ended up being a malacha, then for sure we call that mis'asik. But do we call it mis'asik if he intended to do a certain action, but instead he did the action on something which is also, according to Rashi, we're talking about two different things. So he intended to cut, for example, a particular vegetable which was detached from the ground, and instead he cut one which was attached. According to Tosfos, we're talking about the very same one. So we're talking about, for example, that he thought that this vegetable was detached, and instead it was really attached. So is he chayav or not? Abaye says yes. Rava says no. Okay. So now we have we had one machlokes on that topic, and now we're going to have another one, so two more. Itma, niskaven lizrik, and then we're going to see afterwards why we need to mention the machlokes by all three of them. Itma, niskaven lizrik shtayim v'zorak arba. Suppose a person intended to throw something two amos, which is not yet enough to make him chayev, and instead he threw it four amos, which is now enough to make him chayev. Again, is that considered misasif or not? So the same thing. Rava Amma Potter, Abaye Amma Chayev. Rava is going to say that he's Potter because Rava is going to call him Misasik. Abaye says he's going to be Chayev. Rava Amma Potter, the voice comes Kavin Mizrika the Abba. Rava says because that look after all he didn't intend to throw four amos. When it comes to Shabbos, of course the Kavana is very important because only Melechas Machsheves Asra Torah, the Torah only after Machsheva, the Torah only after Melacha that was done with a conscious intent. And here he didn't intend to throw full four Amos, only two Amos, which is only a Chati Shir. So therefore, Rava would call him a Mesasik. Abaye Amma Chayev, the Chalkab is Kavim, the Zerukab Amma, and Abaye says he's Chayev because after all, he did intend an action of throwing, and what he did end up doing was throwing. So it's similar to the case before about cutting a vegetable, where it turned out that the one that he cut was attached to the ground. Again, you'd have the same machlokas Rashi and Tosfos over here. Whether we're talking about that he intended to throw it two amos and it fell by mistake further away.
But the according to Abaye, what he intended to do was not usher. To throw was not usher on Shabbos.
That's fine. And the same thing in the previous case. To cut a vegetable which is detached from the ground is not in and of itself usher. But Abaye says you can only call him an asset if what he ended up accomplishing is a completely different action than what he started out to do. It's like in the case before with cutting. With picking up versus cutting, but where it was the same action, then Abaye is not going to call him mis'asik. So again, according to Rashi, we're talking about over here, he intended to throw it to a certain spot, which is two amos away, and by accident, he threw it to a spot four amos away. According to Tosfos, this is how the Ritzvah explains them, according to Tosfos, you would have to say that he wanted to throw it to a certain place, which he thought was two amos away, and it turns out that place is four amos away. He misjudged. So according to Rashi, it's talking about that he intended to throw at a certain distance, and he misjudged the strength of his throw and threw it further than he intended to. And according to Tosfos, he misjudged the distance of the spot where he intended to throw it. He thought that it was two, and it turned out to be four. And then we have a third case where Abaye and Rava argue similarly. Kisavu Rishosa Yochid, the Nymphis Rishosa Rabim. What about a similar case? You had somebody thought that a certain area was Rishosa Yochid, and instead it took and threw something in it, four amos or more, or carried it in or whatever, and it turned out to be Rishosa Rabim. Again, Rava Amar Potter, Abaye Amar Chayev, same thing. Rava is going to call him Misasik, and he's Potter. Abaye is not going to call him Misasik, and he's Chayev. Same thing, Rava Amar Potter, Dohola Miskavin, the Zrika Bisura, because he didn't intend to do a throwing, which is Osir, throwing the Rishosa Yochid is Mutter after all. Abaye Amar Chayev, Yomakam Miskavin, the Zrika Ba'alma. And Abaye is going to say he's chayev because after all he did intend to do an action of throwing. Okay, so three different times we have where Abaye and Rava have the same machlokes. So we have to figure out why do they have to repeat it three times. The Gemara says it's tzricha. We need the machlokes in all three cases. The iyash meinin kamaisa. If we only had the first machlokes about picking up versus cutting as opposed to cutting versus cutting, then we would say, Bahu Ka'omar Rava. You know why Rava says over there that he's Potter? Why does Rava call him Misasik? Jahalai Kamakavan Lachatikhadi Sura. Because after all, it's true. He didn't have in mind any kind of cutting which was Osir. Had it been, after all, a vegetable that was not attached to the ground, then his cutting it wouldn't have been any kind of malacha at all. So therefore, you could say, therefore, we can call him Misasik. Abel Miskavan Lizrashayim Lizarak Arba. But after all, when it comes to throwing two versus four, where after all, okay, it's true that he only intended to throw a chatishir, but after all, the arba b'lay tarki b'lay mizrakalei, you can't throw something four amos without it also passing through the first two amos. So in other words, what he wanted to get accomplished did get accomplished, and then some. He intended to throw it two amos, and he did throw it two amos. He just then threw it beyond two amos. So therefore, So in that case, so unlike in the case of the vegetables, where he never intended to cut a vegetable that's attached to the ground, here he did intend to throw two amos, and the fact is he did throw two amos. He just also threw beyond two amos. So you would think maybe in that case.
That's not the same. Intending to throw two amos and throwing four amos is not the same.
The fact is, when you're throwing four amos, it has to pass over the two amos spot first.
But that's not what you intended.
No. But the point is, you could argue, you would have thought, if Rava didn't tell us that he argues with Abaye in that case, you would have thought that there you would say what he intended to do did in fact get accomplished, plus more, because he intended for that thing to pass over those first two amas, and it did, and it also then passed over another two amas. So in other words, his original machshava of throwing two amas did get accomplished. So therefore, Eima Mojalei L'Abaye, maybe he would agree with Abaye and say that can't be called Misasik. The Iyash Menin Baha, on the other hand, if we only had their Machloikas in that case, then you would say, okay, Baha Ka'ama Rava, then you could say, you know why Rava says he's Potter? Because after all, in the end, he didn't intend to throw it four amos at all. And less than four amos is not a chiyuv chafas. Now, granted, less than four amos is also because chafi shiur is also in atorah, according to the Yechidin anyway, which is the halacha. Nevertheless, though, he didn't intend to do a throwing that would actually land him, that would actually make him chayiv chafas. So therefore, the fact that he intended a lesser throwing is enough maybe to call him a sasik. But when it comes to the case of Rishos Yochid versus Rishos Rabim, where after all he did intend to throw it four amas, so okay, he thought that it was a throwing that would make it, that would be mutter because he thought it was Rishos Yochid, but he did intend to throw this distance and he actually threw that distance. Maybe he would agree with Abaye that then you can't call him the Sasek, and therefore we need that Machloikas. And so each one is a chiddush over the previous one. So the fact that we don't just have the third machlokes, it's okay. It's common enough thing to have the less obvious one, and then so to have the more obvious one, and then the less obvious one. So, but ultimately we need the third one. That even in this case of Rishos Yochid versus Rishos Rabim, where he actually intended the full action that he did of throwing four amos, and the only difference is that he thought it was Rishos Yochid, and it turns out to be Rishos Rabim. Even then, Rava is going to call him Misasik and say that he's Potter. Okay. So now, let's see. Tanan, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah. Ovis Malachas Aboyim Chotar Achas. We say that there are 39 Ovis Malachas. Vahavinanba, and we ask, we've already had this a couple of times in this perek, and then we're going to have it at the beginning of Amud Beis as well. Minyana Lomali, why does the Mishnah have to give us a number? We ourselves can count the malachas in the Mishnah and see that there are 39 of them. But Amud Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Yechanan has said, the reason is to hint to us, Shemasan Kolam Behelam Echad, that if a person were to do all these 39 malachas in one helam, in one period of not knowing, so we're talking about the case where we had the third case of our Mishnah back on Daf Samach Zayin, where he knew that it's Shabbos, but he didn't know the malachas are also. So then he's chayev a chatos individually for each malacha. So Rabbi Yechanan is saying the maximum number of chatos he can be chayev is 39. Chayev al kolachas v'achas, and he's going to be chayev an individual chatos for each one of the 39. So that's why the Mishnah uses the number 39. But now let's see if we can fit what Abaya and Rava are saying into that. Bishleim al Abaya, the Amar ki hay gadna. Now, according to Abaya, who says that we have a way where a person does a malacha, and we would have thought that maybe he's mitzasik, and Rava calls him mitzasik, and still he's chayev, the mashkah hasla, what's the scenario that you can find where he, again, we have to have a scenario where he knows that it's Shabbos, but he doesn't know the isurim, but so that's the problem. As we discussed a couple of times already, on the face of it, if he knows of the concept of Shabbos, but he doesn't know any of the isurim of Shabbos, then you can't call it that he knows about Shabbos. Even if he knows about the Esther of Shabbos, even if he knows, let's say, that there's a mitzvah to rest on Shabbos, and he knows about Kiddush and Havdalah, etc., that can't be called that he knows about Shabbos to the extent that he should have to bring separate chatois. It would have to be that he knows that something is also on Shabbos. So according to Abaya, we can find Mashkachatwa, we can find the case with Chayev for each one of them individually. The Yoda, the Isura Shabbos, he knows that there's an Isura on Shabbos to do Malacha. The Yodala Isur Malachas, he also knows about the Malachas, the Chatov, the Shiurin, but he makes a mistake, let's say, each time, each one of the Malachas, he intended to do less than the Shiur, and he does the Shiur. So let's say, just like we said with throwing, where let's say he intended to throw two Amos and threw four Amos, and Abaya says he's Chayev, so the same thing for each of the other ones, the Malachas of harvesting and grinding we talked about already, you need a Gregera size, you need the size of a dried fig, in order to be chayev. So in each case, let's say he intended to harvest less than a dried fig's worth of grain, let's say, and accidentally he did a full dried fig's worth, a full kugazeris worth. The same thing with a bunch of the other ones. You have, we're going to have in the Mishnah a couple of them that give the shiurim. You have, let's say, for example, when it comes to weaving, a person weaves two threads in the cloth, then he's chayev. So he intended to weave one, and by accident he wove two. So you could have like that with each of the ones, and you could say he goes through all the 39 malachas like that, and therefore he's chayev 39 chatos. Ela l'rava d'amav potter, but according to Rava, who says that in that case he's potter, because he didn't intend to do a full shiur of malacha, heichi mashkachas la, what would be the scenario where he's chayev a separate chatos for each one? That would have to be, as we said before, v'zodin Shabbos v'shigas malachas, where he's mazed on Shabbos, he knows that today is Shabbos, he just doesn't know that these malachas are also. The problem with that is, now let's go back to a machloket of Rabbi Yechanan and Rish Lakish that we had a few days ago. What exactly is the nature of his shoyging? We talked about that we had Rabbi Yechanan had said that in order it could be that he knew that these actions are also, he just didn't know they're chayiv kares, and that is already enough to make him a shoyging. Whereas according to Rish Lakish, it has to be that he doesn't know that they're also by a lavi. So therefore, Hanicha Isavala Kirab Yechanan, so it works out well if Rava holds that Kirab Yechanan, the Amma Kivin to Shoggag Bakaris, Afafi Shahizid Balab, he says, even if it was Shoggag and he didn't know that this thing is Chayiv Karis, even though he knew it's also by a lab, then nevertheless, we still call him Shoggag, Mashkachatla, the Yadalala Shabbos Balab. So, okay, you can still have the scenario according to Rava. How is he chayev multiple chatos, even as many as 39? He knows that each of these things is also on Shabbos. He doesn't know that there's kares, and Rabbi Yechanan calls him a shoyig in that. So, therefore, that's how you can have that he ends up doing all the malachas, and we still consider that he knows about Shabbos, because he knows that they're all Isurei Lav. He just doesn't know that they're Isurei kares, and now he's bringing all the chatos. Ela Yisavu Lakirab Shimon Ben Lakish, but if we were to say that Rava holds like Rish Lakish, the Omer actually Yishka is Balav Bakaris, who says that he's only Chayev Chathos if he struggles on the lav and the kares, so according to the shlokish, he has to not even know that it's also by a lav at all. So now we're back to the question that we had before: do yadol al Shabbos v'mai? So in what sense does he know the dinim of Shabbos? So again, it can't be that he knows that these things are also and he intended to do a half a shear, because according to Rava, that would make him a mekasek, and he'd be potter. It has to be that he intended to do the full amount of shear that he actually ended up doing, and therefore he's chayev. But why would he be chayev if he doesn't know any of the Yisurim of Shabbos? According to Rish Lakish, that to be a shogeg, he has to at least know that something is also on Shabbos. And again, the Gemara uses the answer that it used before. In that sugya, the yodel of b'tchumen v'alibed Rav Akiva. You could have, let's say, the case where the only issur Shabbos the person knows is the fact that he's not allowed to go outside the tchum, according to Rav Akiva, where Rav Akiva says that the concept of a tchum of 2,000 amas is actually daraisa. The Chachamim disagree with him and say that it's only Dirabanan. We talked about then. We had the opinion of the Rambam that even the Chachamim would say that there is a tchum of 12 mil daraisa. But without getting into that, the point is Rabbi Akiva holds that a tchum of 12 mil, of 1 mil of 2,000 amos. The Chachamim disagree with him. So the next Mishnah, when it mentions the 39 malachas, would be according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rava's understanding, the Mishnah would have to be according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rava's understanding, if Rava accepts your Shlokish's explanation of Shogeg, then it would come out that the next Mishnah, when it mentions 39, would have to be according to Rabbi Akiva. And it would have to be the case. Suppose that the person only knew of the issue of Tchum of Shabbos. He didn't know about any of the Malachas. He did all 39 of them. Each one of them he intended to do a full shear. And therefore, the Mishnah is saying that he'd actually be chayev for all 39 malachas. Okay. So now we finally get to the list of malachas. We've been going through the whole Masechta so far, presupposing that various things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. Now, finally, in the seventh parak, we get to the actual list of malachas. So the Mishnah
says, does the Gemara ask anywhere why we didn't do this in the beginning and went so far down?
No, but it's a very common. No, the Gemara doesn't ask, but actually, I mean, we discussed at the beginning of the Masechta why it starts, why the Tosfos had discussed over there, why the Mishnah begins with something involving Hatzah. We said one reason is because we learn a lot of dinim from that Mishnah. Another reason is because Hatzah is Malacha Grua. It's a weak Malacha. You wouldn't even think it was Malacha at all, unlike all the other ones, and therefore it had to mention it first. After that, more or less, we were going in order of the things that have to be done before Shabbos. We were talking about, for example, making sure that your clothes don't have anything on them, that for example, a tailor not going out with a needle in his clothes before Shabbos. Then we talked about lighting Shabbos candles, putting your pot on the fire before Shabbos to keep it warm, wrapping it up to keep it warm, making sure your animal is not wearing any accessories or whatever that's not allowed to on Shabbos, make sure that you, a human being, are not allowed to. So now, after we had those were all kind of things that have to be accomplished before Shabbos. So now we're getting into Shabbos itself, is the idea. But also, you know, we've talked about it before. It seems to be very common in the Masechtas of Mishnayos that it will start out with the less obvious things and eventually get down to the more basic things. You have that in many places. In Shas, you have, let's say, for example, Masechta Gittin, for example, doesn't begin with the basic dinim of how to write a get. It begins with the case where a person is bringing a get from point A to point B and saying b'fani nichtam, b'fani nechtam. And you have like that in a lot of Masechtas, where it begins with like far out details of the din, and eventually it works its way back to the basic din. I've mentioned before a theory that I have on that. Since everything was learned about test originally, maybe what it is first they had to formulate and then write down for themselves privately or whatever Mishnayos and dinim that are less obvious in order that they don't forget them. They didn't have to write down, or compose for themselves a list of the oldest malachas and then memorize them because everybody knew what they are. But you need to memorize these detailed dinim that we talked about before.
And also, it's much more coherent to start with a detail and eliminate all the detailed contradictions and then through this process arrive to the cloud rather than establish, assume a cloud and then extend it into the details and then find out that the details contradict each other.
I guess that's possible. I mean, on the other hand, you know, when you get down to it, for example, the Rambam doesn't do it that way. The Rambam also doesn't list the Ovis Malachas until the seventh parak. But similar to Arma Sechta, but the Rambam does deal first with a lot of basic facts about Shabbos. That, for example, things about Dava Sheni Meskaven and then Malacha Sheni Tzricha LeGufa, and then Pikuach Nefesh. And then there's the concept that we learned at the end of the first parak that you can begin a malacha before Shabbos and have it continued on Shabbos. And then, yeah, it's true. We only get sort of to the actual list of malachas in the seventh parak also. Okay, could be.
But the Rambam is a compendium. The Rambam is not an analysis.
This is true. Okay. Hey, so the Mishnah says. Ovis malachas aboyim chotzer achas. There are 40 minus one ovis malachas. Now, why does the Mishnah use the expression 40 minus 1 instead of 39? So we talked about previously something that explains in Chassidus, the idea, a couple of the things that explains about in Chassidus, the idea that there are 39 malachas that we do, and then during the weekdays, and then we're bringing elokus into the world, and then Shabbos we refrain from those malachas, and therefore the 40th malacha, so to speak, is bringing elokus into the world. So there's that, and then there's a variety of other answers. The Tosfos Yom Tov gives a couple of answers. One of them is that we learned earlier in the Masechta. One way we learn the number of 39 malachas is because we said it says 40 times malacha in the Torah, and we said we exclude one of them because we said it doesn't actually refer to malacha. So therefore, the Mishnah is saying 40 minus 1 to hint to us there are actually 40 times it says malacha in the Torah, but you have to not count one of them. And there's a number of other answers as well. Anyway, the other malachas are as follows. Basically, the idea is an av malacha is something that was done for the purpose of making the Mishkan. It's called an av malacha. And then each av has toldos, which is things that are being done where you're accomplishing something similar to the av, but not the exact thing. For example, let's say you have, we talked about, let's say, for example, that you have, for example, an av malacha of toichin, for example, of grinding. And then you have a tolda of that, for example, would be grinding up metal, would be grinding down metal in order to get bits of it. So that's not the same thing. Toichen involves grinding up food, But here you're grinding up something else. So therefore, another example actually we're going to learn on Amud Beis is cutting up vegetables into very small pieces. So each av malacha has told us. The Rishami actually mentions that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish sat down and for a couple of years they worked on this, and they finally found for each av malacha they found 39 told us. They're like this. The first ones we're going to deal with are the ones that have to do with baking bread. Now, baking bread, one way of looking at it is that they didn't actually bake bread as part of the process of making the Mishkan. But what they did is they did need materials for dyeing, is how we're going to learn it in the Gemara. They need materials for dyeing the cloth, the clothes of the Kohenim and the curtains of the Mishkan, etc. And most of those things that you have to do for dyes that come from plants are similar to what you have to do when you're baking bread. So therefore, we list those malachas, but we end up, for example, with the malacha of baking because we're referring to it in terms of bread. There's a different explanation that we're talking about the malachas that we use to make the lechem aponim for the Mishkan. Okay. Anyway, so number one, hazireya, of planting, v'acholish, and plowing. We're going to see in the Gemara, on the face of it, plowing comes before planting. Why is the Mishnah listing them out of order? But anyway, those two are malachas. V'akoyter, harvesting, which is cutting off or detaching something that was growing in the ground. v'hama'amer, gathering things together. And by the way, I mean, here in the Mishnah, we're listing these malachas. Then we're going to spend, from now until the end of the 15th Perek, we're going to be going through one malacha at a time, or a couple of malachas at a time, and dealing with the details of them. What's the av malacha, and what's the tolda of it, what's the shear, what it applies to, and what it doesn't, et cetera. That's going to take up the middle third of our Masechta. It's going to be taken up with that. So v'hama'amer, so the fourth malacha is gathering together. So in the case of grain, it would be, for example, you harvested the grain. Now you need to bundle it together. So that's a malacha. The fifth one is vadosh, is threshing. The way threshing was done. So threshing is, you have, once you've harvested the grain, you have the actual grain kernels themselves. They're inside various shells and coverings or whatever made out of straw. So what you do is you lay down the stalks of wheat on the ground, and you drive over them using something heavy. Very often you use something that's called in English a threshing sledge, which is basically it's a piece of wood with nails or pieces of rock or whatever embedded into it, which goes, you put a weight on top of that. So for example, a person might stand on top of that. It's drawn around, it's pulled around over and over on the grain by animals walking round and round, and eventually it cracks, so as it's going, it cracks open the shell. And then you're able to get the grain out of the shells. That's the malacha of dosh. And therefore, again, told us of it are concepts called mepharik, which is taking, for example, milking a cow is a tolda of dosh, and there's a bunch of other things. And the sixth one is vahazoda. Vahazoda is winnowing, which is now you have a pile of grain mixed with the shells and straw and whatnot. So now what you do is, to get rid of the straw, you take it, you throw it up in the air. You have either there's a natural wind, or you make a wind by slapping sheets or whatever, and the wind blows away the shells and the other lightweight stuff, and doesn't blow away the kernels, and the kernels fall back down to the ground, and therefore now you end up with clean grain. That's the malacha of Zora. Then the next is Haborer. The next one is picking out what is mixed in there. So you still have, for example, now you have, okay, there's grain, but you have, let's say, there's dirt, there's rock, there's other things mixed into it. Those didn't get blown away by the wind because they're too heavy to get blown away. So therefore you need to pick them out somehow. Now, on the face of it, that's basically the same thing as Zora. You're accomplishing the same thing. You're removing something you don't want from something you do want. We'll see in the Gemara why they're listed as separate malachas. The next one is hatoichin. Then you grind up the grain. Vamerakid. Then you sift it with a sieve, because once you've ground it, you still have, even after all the threshing and winnowing and whatever, you still have attached to the actual grain kernel. You have different parts within the grain kernel itself. You have the good quality part of it, the wheat germ. You have the wheat germ, which is the nutritious part of it. You have the white part of it, which is what becomes white flour. You have a shell around that, which is called bran. So all of that is after you ground up the grain, then you sift it in order to get clean white flour, and in order to get out the bran and the wheat germ and whatever. So you have three malachas over here that all involve taking out something that you don't want from something that you want. You're actually accomplishing them in different ways. One with the wind, one by picking out by hand, one by sifting. But we're going to see in the Gemara why they're listed as separate avos malachas, when on the face of it they all accomplish the same thing. Anyway, they're done in different ways, but they all amount to the same thing. So next, the halosh. Then the next thing the person does is you take the flour and knead it and mix it with water to make dough. And the final malacha is v'ha'oifah, is baking. The final malacha of this series is baking it in the oven. So again, in the case of dye stuff, they weren't actually baking them, but there was a similar thing. They'd be cooking them up in a pot in order to get the dye material out of it. Okay. So that's the first series of malachas. That's 11 malachas so far. Then we have the next 13 malachas have to do with making cloth. So these were, of course, they used them in order to make the curtains of the Mishkan, make the clothes of the Kohanim, etc. A gozes is a semer, when a person shears wool from a sheep. So unlike before we had kosher, which was harvesting something from the ground, here we're talking about something that's attached to the body of an animal or a person, and you cut it off. So for example, told us that would be cutting hair, cutting nails, etc. I mean, okay, those might not necessarily be told us because they're malacha shenitzuach legufa, but whatever. The point is those are also under that. If a person, for example, takes a nail clipper and cuts and clips his nails, then yeah, he'd be chayav for goyzes. Okay. So that's the 12th malacha then. The next one, hamalavna, he bleaches the wool, because when you get the wool off the animal, it's dirty, it's got sweat, it's got lanolin, it's got other stuff mixed into it. So you have to bleach it. So Rashi says mechabse benahar, he washes it in the river. The next one, vamenatzai, you comb it out, which is you want to make sure that all the fibers of it are straight and lying next to each other, so that you can spin them into thread. So that's the malacha of its own. About soivoy, then you have, you dye it. If you want wool of a different color, then you dye it. About toiva, the next one is you take the individual fibers and spin them together to make thread. So that's another malacha. And now the next couple of malachas have to do with the actual weaving process. So we have to digress a little bit to talk about how weaving works. It's a pity we're not sitting together, because then it would be easy to show diagrams. But if you want afterwards, go look up anybody who has an art school Gemara. You can find some pictures in the back that help with that. You can find online. There are a couple of YouTube videos that illustrate it, different pictures and whatever. The gist of it is like this: weaving involves you have an Arab thread. In English, it's called the weft, which is going back and forth, which is going up and down above a thread and below a thread. Look closely at any item of clothing you're wearing, and you'll see it's made like that, with threads that go at right angles to each other, crossing over, under, over, under, over. So the way you work that is, the way to accomplish that is, you set up a loom. You have at each end of the loom there are two rollers. You put the chassis threads, which are going to be the length of the cloth. You wrap one end of them around one of these beams, and the other end around the other end. That way you can move it as you're going along and weaving. You can roll it. Then what you do is, in the middle between the two rollers, you have two frames. And in each of those frames, you have a certain number of loops, where what you do is you have, let's say you're weaving a cloth that's 100 threads across, so you're going to have two frames. Each one has 50 loops in it. What you're going to do is you're going to pass the even numbered chassis threads through the loops in one of those frames, and the odd numbered ones through the loops in the other frame. So now what you're able to do is you're able to lift up. When you lift up each frame, then you're lifting up with it half the threads, the even numbered or the odd numbered threads, as the case may be. Then what you do is, then the weaving is, you have the Arif thread is, the Arif thread is wound around a spool. It's in something called a shuttle. You know, we're more familiar nowadays with a shuttle as like an airplane shuttle or a train shuttle or whatever, but the original meaning of a shuttle is something that goes back and forth, which is like this. The aid of shuttle passes back and forth. So what you do is you raise one frame, you raise, let's say, all the odd-numbered threads, and you put the aid of through. So now it's crossing over all the even-numbered threads and under all the odd-numbered ones. Then you lower that frame and raise the other one, and now the aid of thread goes the other way around, over all the odd-numbered ones and under all the even-numbered ones, and so forth. And you go back and forth like that until the cloth is woven. And then in the process, while you're doing that, while you're doing that process, every so often, or after every uh, after every Erev, after every pass through of the Erev, you use something like a comb to press the Erev threads into place, and also to make sure that it's not stretched out too much, because if it's stretched out too much, then it's not going to join well with the rest of the week. So now we're going to talk about several different things that you do in that process. The next malacha is a person makes two bote nirim. So there's a number of different explanations among the Rishonim what oisa shnei bote nirim is. Rashi explains that it means he puts two threads through those loops. So again, you have the frames are set up, each one with its number of loops in it, and you're passing through one thread, or sometimes two threads, into each loop. So oisa shnei bote nirim, Rashi explains, is putting the thread through the loops in those frames, which then you're going to later on raise and lower those frames to be able to do the weaving. A few different other explanations. The Rambam seems to explain the Rambam explains that he's talking that it means making the actual loops themselves. You have different other explanations that it means setting them up. You set them up on a table first before you transfer them to the threads and before you transfer them to the loops. Tosfos wonders, by the way, why it is over here and by some of the other malachas, why right here in the Mishnah doesn't mention the shear. Each of these malachas has a shear, and we're going to go through in the next few prakim, we're going to deal with what the shear is for each of these malachas. So Tosfos wonders why it is that Davka over here and a few of the other malachas further on, it mentions specifically the shear. There is actually an explanation that some of the Acharonim say that maybe when we mention the shear over here, that he's actually not over on Isur D'Oraisa. But okay. Anyway, so that's Oisa Shnei Batinirin. So again, according to Rashi, it means putting the Shefi threads through the loops in order to get them ready, in order to get that now you have each frame has half the threads running through it, and now you'll be able to raise that frame and raise those half of the threads. So that's Oisa Shnei Batinirin. The next one is V'Oreg Shnei Chotin. The next one is weaving two threads, which is the actual weaving, the actual putting the Erev thread back and forth. V'Pitseya Shnei Chotin. And the next malacha is Pitseya two threads. So what is Pitseya? Rashi explains, sometimes you can have, let's say, that part of the cloth was woven too thick. Sometimes you have, let's say, that you wove back and forth the Erev, but it turned out that it was too thick. So now what you want to do is you want to tear out part of that thread in order to make that the weave of the cloth is going to be even. So then that would be the malacha of Pitseya. There's a variety of other explanations in Rishonim what Pitseya is actually. You have an explanation that it means cutting once you've done the weaving process, you cut the cloth off the frame. So that would be the malacha of Pitseya according to that. The Rambam understands that it means, for example, let's say you're going to be repairing a piece of cloth. So one way of doing it, in order that you don't end up with the cloth having a big seam in it, which is going to be very visible, so what you do is you take out some of the threads of the weave, and then you sort of weave them back together. And that would be the taking them apart like that would be the malacha of Pitseya, where you're doing it in order to weave it back together, in order to fix it. So that's the malacha. Because again, all these kinds of things are done. All these kinds of things, when they were weaving the curtains for the Mishkan, they needed to do these things. They needed to set up the loom. They needed to actually weave. And sometimes, again, the weave would be too thick, and they need to thin it out in a certain place. Okay. Next, you have a kosher v'hamatir. The next two malachas are tying a knot and untying a knot. So here, it's actually the Gemara is going to explain later that's not necessarily part of the weaving process per se. You don't necessarily need to tie anything when you're weaving. That actually has to do with when they were making nets to catch the chalazon. We know that they had various cloths in the Mishkan that were made with chalas. Chalas is dyed with the blood of a creature called chalazon, and therefore you need, and it lives in the water and you need to catch it with nets. So therefore, they'd have to string together nets, they'd have to tie ropes onto nets in order to catch the chilazin. And the same thing, sometimes they would have to untie ropes from one net in order to tie them onto another one. Bechlal, by the way, with all these malachas, if a person does the malacha not for a constructive purpose, then it's not considered the malacha. So, for example, when it comes, let's say, to untying a knot, if he's stam untying a knot for where he's not intending to tie it afterwards, that's not necessarily a malacha daraisa. Only if he's untying it for the purpose of tying it later on. As in the example over here, where he's untying it from one net in order to attach it to another net. But then he'd be chayim. So that's what they would do when they were catching the chalazim. By the way, achronim deal with the question. I mean, not necessarily did the Jewish people do all these malachas in the Mishkan, because they didn't necessarily, all of the things for the Mishkan were brought within a couple of days. So it's not like they had time to go and plant these herbs and catch the chalazin and so on and so forth. So you have Achronim talk about various possibilities. Maybe the same way as we know, for example, that Yaakov planted the cedar tree, the shittim trees in Mitzrayim and told the Jewish people to take them along with him. Maybe he also told them to prepare in advance the various other things they're going to need for the Mishkan, or maybe not. Maybe they bought some of these things ready-made from the Goyim, but somebody had to make them. Somebody had to plant these plants for the dye. Somebody had to catch the chalazin, and so on and so forth. And therefore, they can be considered malachas, even if Jewish people themselves didn't do them right then for the Mishkan, because they are essential prerequisites. Somebody had to do them in order to make the Mishkan.
Does this apply also to shoelaces? It's considered a melacha only if you plan to retie the shoelace.
So actually, we will learn the 15th parak of our Masechta is going to talk about the dinim of tying and untying. We're going to go through systematically each of the melachas and deal with the details of it. We're going to talk about in particular over there the melacha of kosher. I don't want to get too far into it now, but each of these malachas, besides it has a shear, each one, many of them, there's also a way in which the malacha is done in which you chayev. In the case of kosher, for it to be chayev, it has to be the type of, on the daraisa level anyway, it has to be the type of knot that professionals make, not just the kind of knot that you or I make, and the kind that is meant to be tied and never untied, That would be the kind, like, for example, when you're tying ropes onto a net, you're not intending in the future to untie them because you don't usually need to. So that would be the kind that would be also midaraisa. Midrabanan, there are certain other kinds that are also as well. Tying shoelaces is generally not in that category, but you're allowed to tie and untie shoelaces on Shabbos. It's not a professional knot, and it's not meant long-term, but again, we'll deal with that. We'll deal with that in about 40 blocks, Bez Hashem. So we'll be dealing with that, Bez Hashem, sometime in the middle of Tammuz. Okay. Moving on. The next malacha is Vatofer State Spheres, sewing two stitches. Now in the Mishkan, for example, there were various parts. Let's say, for example, it comes to the curtains of the Mishkan. They made, let's say, when it came to the bottom layer of curtains, the ones that were made out of tchelas, v'agamon, etc. So what does it say? They had 10 curtains, they had 10 panels, and each 5 panels that were 4 amos wide had to be sewn together. And then you wind up with a group of 5 and another group of 5, and then those were hooked together, with the cross and with the hooks. So there's a malacha of sewing, because they need to sew them together in the Mishkan. And the same thing if a person rips out 2 stitches in order to re-sew 2 stitches over there. Same idea. In other words, it can happen. You stitched it badly, and now you need to take out the stitches in order to re-sew them. Again, if you were to rip them out not for the purpose of fixing them, then on a daraisa level, it wouldn't be, actually, the Gemara is going to explain later on that actually what it was, not so much if they stitched it badly in the first place, because these guys are experts, they didn't necessarily do that, but Let's say you had, for example, it could happen that a moth or something ate a hole in one of the curtains, and they need to sew it back up. So then part of the malacha of sewing that back up would involve cutting or ripping the cloth above and below the hole so that you have a long straight hole rather than a round one, which is easier to sew up without it looking really bad. So therefore, so again, you're doing it for a constructive purpose. If you just rip for a destructive purpose, then on Daraisa level it would be potter. And then in Drabonon, that's also. So that's Hakere Amanakos for Shetkos. And again, you know, we have told this of them. So for example, you know, we're going to get later on in the Masechta into the question, for example, of, let's say, ripping paper on Shabbos. Would that be part of this Malacha as well? So you have one way of looking at it. The Alter Rebbe mentions that there's a difference because here we're talking about something, you know, a cloth is woven out of many many threads, as opposed to a paper is one solid thing. So not necessarily would it be a malacha in and of itself. But we'll get to that later in the Masechta Bez Hashem. Okay. Next, now we're going to deal with the next series of malachas has to do with preparing skins. And preparing them for and preparing them for writing. So in the Mishkan, most of them have to do with you had, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you had the curtains for the Mishkan that were made out of ram skins and out of tachash skins. So they needed to prepare those. As far as writing and erasing, we'll see later what those had to do with. Those had to do with the beams of the Mishkan. Nowadays, it would be, let's say, a person wants to write a Sefer Torah, then you need the following eight malachas in order to accomplish that. Hatsodzvi, number one, a person catches a deer or any other kind of wild animal or any kind of animal. That's the malacha of trapping it. Hashoichtoi, he shechts the animal. Hamakshitoi, he strips off the skin. Hamochoi, he sorts the skin, which is part of the process of tanning it, of making it into leather or parchment or whatever, as you have to sort it. And the process of tanning it, of doing the rest of the tanning, the Gemara is going to point out that those two things seem to be the same malacha. So why are they listed separately? And we'll see. The Gemara will deal with that. So that's the malacha. Next, he smooths out the skin, because after you've tanned it, the skin is still rough in various places, and you need to smooth it out in order to use it for leather or parchment or whatever. So that's a separate malacha. So the Gemara, as far as the matter of tanning, actually, the Gemara is going to mention, again, because we can't list both salting and tanning, because those are just two different stages of the malacha of tanning. Therefore, the Gemara takes one of them out and puts in instead a malacha called sirtur, tamaskautit, which is where he draws lines on the leather or on the parchment. For example, you're looking at, say, Torah, for example, you have lines scored over there that the sirtur should be able to write neat lines. If you have, let's say, leather, you score lines on it in order to be able to cut it to a certain even size. So the Gemara mentions that that's an av malacha as well. And then you have, Hamamachko, he smooths it out, for example, by taking off the hair or the wool that's attached to it, for example, or in general smoothing it out in order that it should be smooth leather or smooth parchment, whatever. Hamachko, then he cuts it down, he cuts it to a certain size. Hakosif Shteyotzias, a person writes two letters. Hamochak Hamanas Lichtov Shteyotzias, or a person erases with the purpose of rewriting two letters. So there, what it was, what in the Mishkan, what do they need to do writing? Where was the malacha they did writing for the Mishkan? So the Gemara explains that what it is they had the beams of the Mishkan. The din was that it was supposed to be that each beam goes in a certain place. Now, even though they had 20 beams on the north side of the Mishkan and 20 on the south side, and all of them are made to the same size, so on the face of it, they could be interchangeable, but you're not supposed to do that. The expression, the Gemara is, keresh shahoy batsafen, yinothin batsafen, a beam that the first time was placed on the north side, on future times it should also be placed on the north side. There's a similar concept, by the way, that it says as far as a sukkah, that's right to do, that when you're building your sukkah, that each beam should be in the same place that it was previously. Anyway, the point is, so therefore they marked the beams with letters. So they know, for example, let's say they'd mark the left side of one beam with an aleph and the right side of the beam next to it with an aleph, and then they would line up the aleph, and they know they have the beam in the right place. So therefore, they have the right letters for that purpose. And if it happened that they wrote the wrong letter, then they would have to erase it and write the right letter. So that's a separate malach. Next, the last few malachas are kind of miscellaneous malachas. Habboine, building, which obviously they built the Mishkan, v'asoser, and tearing down. And again, it has to be soser amanach livnos. It has to be that he's tearing down in order to rebuild it. We actually learned in the second parak, we had an opinion over there that you're only chayav for soser only if you're doing soser amanach livnos b'makoimo, only if you're doing it with the purpose of where you're actually going to rebuild it in the same place. So, for example, according to that opinion, if you tore down a building in one place and you intended to take the bricks and build with them someplace else, then you would be kosher, according to that opinion. We said, why? What about the Mishkan, where it was built, where they were constantly taking it down in one place and rebuilding it someplace else? We said, that's different, because since Hashem told them, we were to camp, so each place is considered the same place. Okay. Anyway. A mechaber, a person puts out a fire, the hamaver, or a person who lights a fire. Those they needed to do, Rashi explains, when it came to cooking the dye stuff. Again, they needed to boil them up in a pot, and then they needed to boil them up in a pot, so they needed to light a fire, and then in order that they don't get burnt, then they need to extinguish the fire. Different explanation. We learned before, according to Rav Shimon, that's the purpose that you have to have. Each malacha has a purpose of its own, not just in order to save something else. Otherwise, he says malacha shenitzu lechalagufa would be they needed charcoal in order to be able to melt the metal for the Mishkan. They needed to make charcoal. So they needed to take wood and burn it, and then make charcoal of it. And then charcoal burns hotter than wood, and therefore it would burn hot enough to be able to melt the metal. The next one is hamakir patish, hitting with a hammer, which is talking about the final hammer blow that's needed in order to make a keli or something. So Rashi over here actually mentions something else that it means when, let's say for example, you have a smith is working with metal. At the end, when he's finished with working with the metal, the hammer itself that he was using might have bumps and dents on it in different places from the hard metal that he was banging. So at the end, what he does is he takes the hammer and bangs it on the anvil, which he was working on, in order to smooth it out. So that would be Gmar Malach. A bunch of other Rishonim argue on Rashi and say that's only according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. The Chachamim give a different explanation of Makir HaPatish, but the bottom line is it's the final thing that's needed in order to accomplish, to make the thing usable for its purpose. The Rishami actually says that any malacha that you can't find to be a tolda of some other malacha is a tolda of Makir HaPatish. There is actually nowadays, you know, in the last 150 years, the various rabbanim and poskim talk about the question of electricity on Shabbos. There actually were opinions early on that said that electricity is actually mutter on Shabbos, because they said it's similar to turning on a faucet. Obviously, the halacha is like that. We all grow up knowing that electricity is also on Shabbos. And there's various grounds
like that.
What?
You said the halacha is like that. The halacha is not like that.
No, the halacha is like that. That it's also to use.
But it's also.
That's also right.
Okay.
So, but you have then within that you have different opinions of achronim on what grounds is it also. One popular one is that it's also on the grounds of mavir, because you're creating a spark when you close the circuit, then you're making a spark. Another idea is that it's a malacha of boine, because you have the wires inside the house. You're closing the circuit. You're moving one wire closer to the other, and therefore, in effect, you're building inside the house. And you have, I think that was Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's position. And then you have, there's an opinion that it's makir patish, the malacha that we're dealing with over here, because beforehand, the wires were not usable. Before you close the circuit, the wires are not usable. They won't conduct electricity. And now you close the circuit, and now you made it into a usable, functional thing. that's the 38th Malacha, and the 39th, Hamotzi Mirashos Lirashos, carrying from one Rishos into another, which of course we already talked about, and now the first Malacha, now after our Mishnah, after beginning from the end of our Perek, the Mishnah is going to be going systematically through all the Malachas. It's mostly going to be going in reverse order. So it's going to start with Haitzah and then work its way back to the other Malachas for each one of them, what the Shiur is and what the details are and whatever. So carrying from one Rishos to another is the last Malacha. Okay. Harei elu avos malachas. So these are all the avos malachas. Avoyim chater achas, 40 minus 1. We're going to see the Gemara is going to explain eventually why the Mishnah needed to repeat that if we already said the number at the beginning of the Mishnah. Okay. So starting out the Gemara on Omer Beis, first of all, we have the question that we already had a few times in the Perek, Minyan Olamali, why does the Mishnah need to give us the number? We ourselves, at the beginning of the Mishnah, we ourselves can count there are 39 malachas. And the answer is, Amar Rav Yechanan, Sheimaston, Kulam, Behelem Echad, Chayim, Achalachas, Achas. It comes to teach us that if he were to do all these malachas in one Helem, he would be Chayim 39 Chatzos. As we discussed what the exact scenario is, how you could have, according to Rav Yechanan, that he didn't know their Chayim Kares, according to Rav Shlokish, that he didn't even know their Chayim Alav, and he only knew about Tchumen, according to Abaya, that he could be doing them, thinking that he's only going to do half the malacha, and he ends up doing the whole malacha, and according to Rava, again, then he doesn't know about Tchumen. Okay. Let's start off with the malachas. Hazereya v'hachodesh, we said the first two malachas are planting and plowing. So the question is, mechti michrab karvi b'resha, after all, the order of things is that you plow first, and then you plant. Lisni chodesh v'hadr lisni zereya. So why does the Mishnah mention zereya? Why does the Mishnah mention planting first? It should mention plowing first. We're going in the order in which malachas are done, after all. The answer is Tana be'eretz Yisrael kari. Tana be'eretz Yisrael kari. The answer is because the Tana is living in Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnayos, after all, were composed in Eretz Yisrael. Zari bereisha b'hadar kari. There, what they do is now like this. In Eretz Yisrael, the ground is harder. So therefore, now normally what it is in other places in the world, the ground is softer. So what happens is you plow and then you depart and then you scatter the seeds on the ground, and the ground is soft enough that they'll be covered pretty soon by soil and they'll start growing. In Eretz Yisrael, you actually need to do a second plowing after you planted in order to cover the seeds. So the Mishnah wants us to know that is also considered to be a malacha. You shouldn't think that maybe the malacha of plowing is only the first plowing, which is breaking up the soil and making it ready for planting. No, the Mishnah wants to tell us that also this kind of plowing, which is done more gently just to cover the seeds, is also a malacha of plowing. Next. So now we learn in a braisa. Let's talk about some things that are related to planting. And now we have again. So we talked about before the avos and toldos. There's also something called me'ein malacha, similar to the malacha. So therefore, the braisa says hazereya, a planting a seed, v'hazoymer, or pruning branches of a tree, v'hanetea, or planting a branch into the ground. You put the branch into the ground, and eventually it develops roots. V'hamavrich, or layering, which is you take a branch of a tree, for example, a branch of a grapevine, and you bend it down, and then you put one end of it into the dirt while the other end of it is still attached to the parent tree. And it's also called cloning in English. And this is actually, when we talk about cloning, we talk about genetic cloning and whatever, it comes from that, because the new plant ends up being a clone, an exact genetic copy of the original one. So what you do is you take a branch of it, you bend it down into the ground while it's still attached to the parent tree. Eventually, it develops roots of its own, and then it breaks off, or you cut it off the parent tree, and there you have a new tree or a new grapevine. So that's called mavrich, v'hamarkiv, or grafting a branch from one tree onto another one. So all of those, kulan, malacha achasein, all of those are considered one malacha, because they're all to promote the growth of the plant and therefore they would all therefore they're all osur. So what does that mean? Rashi says, so therefore, let's say a person were to do all these five things. We said in the first Mishnah of our Perek that if a person does malachas habim me'ein malacha achas, if he does many malachas that are all related to one malacha, then he would, then he's only chai of one chatas. So that's what we're saying. He were to do all these five things, he would only be chai of one chatas. And Rashi just explains that Zergeya and Meteya are two different, one involves seeds and one involves plants. And that's the point. So that's my Kamash Malan. What does the Braisa want to inform us by telling us that? Hok Kamash Malan, exactly that. That even though the person is doing many different malachas, but they all are similar to one malacha, because all of them involve promoting the growth of a plant. Nevertheless, he's only chayav one chatas for all of them. You shouldn't think, in other words, that they're considered different obvious malachas, again, because they're not actual things that were done for, these things were not actual things that were done for the construction of the Mishkan, but they're all similar to, that, because they're all involved in making the plant grow. Next, so in that connection, Amar of Acha, Amar of Chia, Amar of Ashi, Amar of Ami, Zomer Chayet Mishum Neteya, that if a person prunes a plant, then he's chayev on the ground of Neteya, of planting, the same way as when you're planting a branch of a tree into the ground. So the same thing over here, he's accomplishing the same thing. He's making the tree grow. So it's not similar, in other words, so it's not really similar to planting a seed in the ground. Planting a seed in the ground is just putting in a seed, and eventually it starts developing roots. Here you're putting in a branch into the ground. Or here you're cutting off a dead branch from a tree. Then if a person plants a branch in the ground, or if he bends down a branch so that it goes into the ground and eventually starts developing roots, or if he grasps the branch from one tree onto another, chayev mishum zereya, then he's chayev on the ground of zereya, on the grounds of planting. What do you mean? Mishum zereya ein mishum neteya loy. What do you mean? Why is he chayev only on the grounds of zereya, which is related to planting seeds? Why is he not chayev on the grounds of neteya, of planting a tree? The answer is ema af mishum zereya. You're right. The Gemara doesn't mean, the Braisa doesn't mean that he's chayev only because of zereya. He's chayev also because of zereya in addition to neteya. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean he's going to be chayev separate chatzos? One possibility is that yes, one way of understanding when we started saying zoymer chayev mishum neteya, he would mean therefore that pruning a branch from a tree, and then he would be planting a branch in the ground as well, all behela mechod, then he would be chayev two chatois. So, in fact, that's how the Ritva understands Rashi, that when we say over here, there's neteya and there's zereya, even though we said that they're all considered a malacha, but they're actually really considered two different groupings of the malacha, and therefore they're actually in principle he should have to bring two chatois. But what we do is we had earlier the concept of grira, that when you have two of the same malacha, then they can be covered under one chatos. So here also, basically, what happens is that what would happen is, in principle, you should have to bring two chatos, one for zereya, one for sowing a seed, which is also related, we're saying, to pruning a branch off a tree, another one for planting this branch into the ground and waiting for it to develop roots, which would be a separate thing called neteya. In principle, you should have to bring two chatos for them, but because they're all part of the malacha of Zereya, therefore he winds up bringing only one chata. Tosfos discusses over here some other possibilities, which is that we're not talking about the question of how many chatzos he has to bring. We're talking about the question of what hasra do we have to give him. Suppose he's doing it b'mezid. We know if we need to give a person hasra, we need to warn him, if you do this malacha, you are going to be chayav tefila. So they have to tell him the proper malacha. If they see him, let's say, if they see him planting a seed in the ground, and they tell him, you're going to be chayav on the grounds of malacha of chodesh, then that's no good, because chodesh has nothing to do with planting. Chodesh is plowing, of breaking up the dirt. So they have to tell him the proper malacha. So Tosfos discusses over here that maybe the Gemara is talking about over here, what they need to tell him. Do they need to tell him Zerea, or do they need to tell him Nekea when he's doing one of those malachas? Next. So that would be the point. Is when we're saying over here that these things are awesome, Mishum Zerea, that whether they tell him you're doing Nekea, don't do it, or whether they're telling him you're doing Zerea, don't do it, either way that would work. But again, that's the fundamental difference. It actually explains Nekea has to do with trees, Zerea has to do with seeds. But ultimately they're all one big heading of Malacha. They're all one Av Malacha. Okay. Omer of Kahana. More on this question of pruning. What if a person is pruning the branches from the tree to make it grow better, but he also needs the wood, that he's also going to be using the wood that he pruned off it? Then chayev shtayim. So now he's chayev two chatos. Achas mishum kotzer v'achas mishum neteya. One for harvesting and one for planting, because we just said. So one of them is harvesting because he needs the wood. So that's the equivalent of just cutting off branches of the tree. And therefore, that's the malacha of koyser. So Rashi says it's a tolda of koyser. There's a tolda of koyser. Koyser itself would be where koyser itself would be, for example, harvesting grain, where he's doing it purely for the purpose of having the grain. He's not doing it in order to improve the field at all. Here, what you have is he's doing it in order to improve the tree and in order to get some wood. So therefore, it's a tolda of koyser. But in addition, he's also chayev for neteya, as we just said, which is a tolda of zereya, because we said he's also promoting the growth of the tree. He's also making the tree grow better. Tosfos says that actually, even if we say malacha shein etzricha legufa is chayev, which is according to Rabbi Yehuda, even he would agree that in this case you have to want the wood in order for it to be considered a malacha. Because otherwise it would be the equivalent of the destructive malachas that we said, like ripping or whatever, which is not chayev unless he's doing it for a constructive purpose. Okay. So in this case, he's chayev for two. In this case, he's chayev for two malachas. Similarly, Rabbi Yosef says, Amar Rabbi Yosef, chayman de kotel aspasta. Similarly, if a person cuts aspasta from the ground, aspasta is unripe grain when it's in stalk, but the grain hasn't really started growing yet. At that point, you would harvest it. Or it's not actually unripe grain. It's a type of plant, like alfalfa or something, which you grow it specifically. You grow it specifically for animal food, and in particular, it has the property that when you cut it, then that makes it grow better. You cut it a few times a month to feed the animals, and that makes it grow better. So the same thing, if he does that on Shabbos, chayev shtayim, he's going to be chayev two chatos. Achas mishum kotzer v'achas mishum neteya. Same thing, one because he's harvesting it in order to feed to the animals, and the other one because it makes the plant grow better. Okay, there are achronim that talk about a distinction. We'll say that when it comes to wood, the Gemara mentioned that he has to actually be wanting to use the wood. When it mentions the aspasta over here, it doesn't mention that distinction, that he dafka wants to use it for animal food, and therefore they would say that there's a difference when it comes to soft plants like that. Then you chayev even if you weren't doing it for the purpose of using it. Because the pasta is because aspasta and other things like that are meant to be eaten. So when you're harvesting them, you're intending to eat them or to feed them to your animals or whatever. As opposed to wood, is not necessarily meant to be used. Okay. So that's another example where a person does one action and is chayev for two chatzos. And similarly, another example, Omar Abaya, chayman de konev silka. If a person cuts off leaves, if a person cuts, not leaves, if a person cuts off beets or turnips or something from the ground, and again, that helps them grow more. Same thing. Same thing. He's chayv two chatois, one for harvesting because he harvested the beet, and one because it makes it grow faster. We're not really talking so much about the beet root itself. We're talking actually about the beet leaves. We're talking about the beet leaves. He cuts them off, and again, cutting them off makes them regrow faster. So the same thing. He's chayv for cutting off the leaves, and he's also chayv for making them grow faster and better. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah of Acholish, the next malacha we said was plowing. The tana, we learned in a b'risa. Here's also, we're going to have different examples of things that all amount to the same malacha. Acholish, actual plowing, so to plow up the earth and making it ready for planting. Acholish, or digging a hole in the ground. Acholish, or making grooves in the ground. All of those things, kolon me'in malacha achasen, all of them are considered one malacha. So again, they all have the purpose of making the ground softer and making it that you're able to put something in the ground. So they're all considered the malacha of Chodesh. Again, you know, we have before, just like we were talking about with Zoymer and Netea, that you have a bit of a different definition that we've shown him have of how exactly we determine what's an av and what's a tolda. Is it that the av is what was done for the Mishkan and told her anything else, then in that case, only plowing would be the actual av malacha and everything else would be a tolda. On the other hand, there's the Rambam learns that it's basically what's the purpose of it. If you're doing something which accomplishes the same thing, you now have a hole in the ground that you can use for something, then it's all considered an av malacha. So the Rambam would actually consider all three of these to be the same av malacha. There's not really that much of a nafkamina. The nafkamina really would be based on what Tosfos is saying, whether you have to give masra with the actual av malacha. So according to the Rambam, if, let's say if you see a person digging a hole, you could tell him you're doing the malacha of digging, and he would be chayav. Whereas according to Rashi, you would dafka have to be telling him that you're doing the malacha of plowing, because according to him, digging a hole would be a tolda of it. So now in this connection, Amr of Sheshes, Hoytoi Gavshushes, the Nafla, suppose that there was a mound of dirt on the ground, the Nafla, and he took it on and he leveled it on Shabbos. So it depends where it was. But Bayis, if it's inside the house, Chayev Meshum Boineh, then he's Chayev on the grounds of the Malacha of Boineh, because now he's improving his house. He doesn't have a bump in his floor anymore. But if it was out in the field, chayiv mishum chodesh, then he's chayiv on the grounds of plowing, because he's doing it not in order to improve the field, he's doing it in order to soften the ground. He's doing it in order to soften the ground and make it more ready for planting. So soften it or smooth it out or whatever, and make it more ready for planting. But if it was inside the house, then it's a different malacha called bonus. Omar Rabba, and Rabba says in a similar way, if there was a hole in the ground, and he filled it up with dirt, same thing. Again, if it was in the house, he would be chayiv on the grounds of boina, because he's improving his house. He's not doing it for the purpose of planting, so you can't call it chodesh, but he's doing it for the purpose of smoothing out his floor and making it that now it's more comfortable in his house. So he's chayiv for boina, for building and improving his house. And again, if he did it out in the field, he would be chayav for chodesh, because now he made that the ground is more ready for planting. You have softer dirt over there, which he's able to plant in. You have the Rambam says he has smoother dirt, which is he has a smoother surface, which now he's able to plant in. So therefore, he'd be chayav on that. Another din in this connection, Amar Rava, ha'choifel guma b'Shabbos ve'en esarech elol atra. What if a person digs a hole on Shabbos, but the only purpose he's digging it for, he doesn't actually need the hole, he needs it because he needs the dirt. So then, potter aleha, then he'll be potter, then it's not considered a malacha, because if we're talking about it's in his house, so then there's no matter of chodesh, because we already said that chodesh doesn't apply in the house. So therefore, the only thing that could be on the grounds of would be boina. It's not boina it's not boneh because it's not boneh because he's not improving his house. Adrabi, he's doing something destructive in his house. He's making a hole in the ground which he doesn't really need, but he's doing it for the dirt. So therefore, so we're saying that he'd be potter because he did a destructive act, and it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. Okay, you have other Rishonim, you have Rabbi Hanano, learns that actually there's really no difference between the house and the field for that purpose, whatever. The point is that he's doing it not for the purpose of having a hole, but for the purpose of having the dirt. So we're saying he's potter alayah, he'd be potter for it, because he's makalko, because he's ruining the floor, or ruining the field. Vafilu that Rabbi Yehuda, the Allah malacha shein tzricha legufa chayiv alayah, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who we've learned a number of times in the Masechta, would say that a person is chayek for doing a malacha where he doesn't need the actual, where he's doing the malacha for a side purpose, not for the actual purpose that was done in the Mishkan, or not for a purpose that he actually, not because he actually needs the malacha, but because he needs the results of it, or not because he needs the, for example, malacha shen tzricha legufa, we talked about before, would be, let's say, for example, carrying out a dead body from a house on Shabbos, where he's not doing it because he needs the body to be someplace else, because it's just because he wants it out of his house. But the same thing over here, he's not digging the dirt because he actually wants to make a hole. He would have preferred, in fact, according to other Rishonim, and maybe Rashi holds this way also, that he would prefer, if he had loose dirt already available, he would have used that rather than digging a new hole. So that's an example, according to that opinion, of Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa. Usually the Yehuda would say it's chayiv. Still, over here he would be murder that he would agree it's potter because hani merely mistaken, because the Yehuda would say fine, but I only apply that where he's doing something constructive. Chai makalkol, who wears over here, he's doing something destructive because he's ruining the floor of his house, or he's ruining the field where he's making this hole. So therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that makalkol, where he's doing it shaloyah manasa sakin, he's not doing it with the purpose of later on fixing it, he would be potter. So it would be also the Rabbanan, but it would be potter. The next one, we said the hakoyter, we said a person harvests. So tana, we learn in a brisa, hakoyter, whether a person is harvesting grain, haboyter, or harvesting grapes, cutting grapes off the grapevine, vahagoyter, or cutting or harvesting dates. Each kind of harvest in Hebrew, there's a different kind of word for it. Unlike in English, where we just call them all harvesting, in Hebrew you have a different term for each one of them. So he cuts dates off the tree. Vahamesik, or he cuts all, he harvests olives off the tree. Vahoda, or he picks figs off the tree. All of those, kolon malacha achasein, all of them are considered malacha achas. And again, according to Rashi, one of them would be the Av and the other one would be Tobit. According to the Rambam, all of them would be Ovid. Amr Papa, high man the shoddy piece of the dikla. So the Papa says in that connection, if a person takes a clump of earth and throws it at a palm tree, the Afer Tamri, and with that he causes dates to fall off the tree, Chayev Shayim, then he would be Chayev, two Malachas, Achas Mishim Tolish, one because of Tolish, which would be a Tolda of this Malacha of Koitzer, because like this koitzer involves harvesting it, and it involves harvesting it in the usual way, using, let's say, a sickle or whatever. Over here, he's harvesting it in an unusual way, using a piece of dirt. So therefore, it would be a tolda of toilish. The achas mishum mefarik, also, he'd be chayev on the grounds of mefarik, which is removing something from its natural container. Now, what you have is the dates grow grow in clusters on the palm, and they grow attached to the branch, and therefore removing them from the branch would be mefaris, removing it from its natural container. So actually the Rishonim explains that actually what it is not so much. It's not so much because they're attached to the tree, because that's true of all kinds of fruits. What it is they're attached to the tree in clusters. And when you knock it down, what happens is not only it gets detached from the tree, but also the individual dates get detached from the cluster, and that would be mefaris. So now what it is, and actually that brings up a point. That brings up a point. So what about, for example, let's say you're eating grapes on Shabbos. Does that mean you wouldn't be allowed to because you're removing them from their cluster? So actually, you have the egg white towel, one of the achronim, that wants to say that, in fact, if you're eating grapes, you would only be able to pick them off the cluster right before you're eating them. And then you're allowed to, but not if, let's say, you're picking them off a while before in order to put them in a bowl. Okay, but you have there's other explanations, which is that that's not a problem because, for example, Tosfos mentions over here the dates have like a shell around them, a peel around them, and when you knock them off the tree, you're getting them out of that peel. So that wouldn't apply, let's say, to grapes that you're taking off a cluster. Anyway, so Rav Papa says he'd be chayv two chatos. Rav Ashi says no, he wouldn't be chayv at all. It's not the normal way of getting things off a tree that way, by knocking them down with a piece of dirt, by a clod of dirt. It's not the normal way of getting them off the branch or out of their shell or off their cluster or whatever, as we said. It's not the normal way of doing that, by knocking them off like that. Therefore, he'd be putter because a malacha that's done in an unusual way is putter. The next thing the Mishnah had said by Ma'amer, the fourth malacha, was Ma'amer, was gathering together. Omar Rava, so Rava says in this connection, Chayman de Konif Milcham Malachta, if a person gathered salt from a salt pan, then Chayim Mishum Ma'amer, you'd be Chayim for this malacha. So a salt pan is a place where you had, we talked about this before, you have a place where you have near the ocean or near a body of salt water, you dig a ditch in the ground, you bring some of the water into there, then you close it up, so now the water starts evaporating out of it, and eventually the water evaporates and you have salt left. So Rava is saying that a person will be chay from Amr when he gathers that salt together. However, Abaya Omar, no, Ein Imur, Ela B'Gidula Kaka, Abaya says no, the concept of Ma'amer, the Malacha of Ma'amer, only applies to things that grow from the ground. So therefore, in the case of salt, there wouldn't be the Malacha of it. You have a discussion among the poskim. Also, is Ma'amer only where the thing actually grew, or does it apply in other places as well? So one thing they mention is that, let's say, for example, when you have things, sometimes you take figs and squash them together in order to make one big mass, then you'd be chayv from Amr, even if it's someplace else other than where they grew. But on the other hand, if you're just talking about gathering them together, then maybe it only applies where they actually grew. Yeah, we have a bit of discussion about that. Then we said hadosh. We said threshing, tonos, so we learned in a braisa. Again, you have different parts of that malacha, hadosh, the actual threshing of the grain, and also the hamanapis, also combing flax, which is you're getting rid of the, like this, you have flax fibers grow inside a stalk, so you're removing them from the stalk, so that you're removing them from the stalk. That would be a tolda of dosh. That would be a type of dosh because you're removing it from its natural container. And also a person who does similarly like that with cotton, where you pass the cotton to a cotton gin in order to get out the seeds from it. So again, the idea is you're getting the seeds out of their natural container. Kulan, malacha achase, and again, all of them are considered one malacha where you're removing something from the container which you don't need, so therefore all of them are under the thing of dosh. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow discussing more of the malachas, and in particular, a large part of what we're going to focus tomorrow is the dinim of borer, which is a very practical thing that we have every Shabbos. We have to know these dinim about what's allowed and what's not allowed on the ground of borer. So we'll be discussing that tomorrow. That's Hashem.
Thank you. So when you have, let's say, a chicken on Shabbos, and you don't want to eat the skin, are you allowed to peel off the skin, which is taking off the bad from the good?
So that we're going to deal with tomorrow. There are rules
about
it. One of the rules being that you're allowed to do it right before eating. So then, you have. We're going to deal with that tomorrow. That's the time.
Okay. We'll wait. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks.